Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 125 for December 17th, 2007. John's nuts! This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/twit. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. So with us, johncdvorak.org/blog. Ladies and gentlemen, a very good twit to you. We didn't do it last week, so that means we have twice the news, twice the hot air. Hi, John.
Hey.
Also, Jason Calacanis of Mahalo. What, the bong back up the wrong way? What happened there, Jason?
I just swallowed a cashew down the wrong chute.
Aha!
I think he's hanging out with Adam Curry too much.
We're trying to get Adam on. We called him once.
I have a box of cashews and macadamias right here.
You know, they say nuts are good for you, except for cashews and macadamias, which are pretty much heart attacks in a can.
Are they?
Oh, yeah.
Pure fat. Yeah. Pure fat.
Eat some almonds, some walnuts.
I better get some water.
You can't eat those while you're talking, though, because if it goes down the wrong pipe, you're going to be hacking the whole show. So be careful.
He's dying here. This is terrible.
All right.
Don't worry.
I'll get some water.
I'll edit it all out.
Well, why bother?
Note to Dane, whatever you do, don't edit this part.
I think we just lost John.
The night John C. Dvorak died.
Exactly.
You know, today is the 60th anniversary of the transistor, invented by that Nazi William Shockley in 1947 on December 16th. He won a Nobel Prize for it. John is really out. John is gone.
It's terrible. All right. You know, the funny thing is I thought it was the 50th.
It's the 60th.
Yeah, I know. I didn't do the math right. I don't know what I was
1947.
Thinking.
1947. That's kind of amazing.
So how come it wasn't a big deal like 10 years ago when it was the 50th?
They didn't do nothing, did they? Except they do the same thing every time. They ask Gordon Moore, is Moore's Law running out of steam? And he says, not yet. And that's it.
Like,
reporters have no imagination.
Yeah.
Not yet. Maybe someday soon.
Yeah, with the bio stuff coming out, it's going to probably even increase, right? I
mean, oh, isn't that interesting? Maybe that's where we'll break the wall.
Proteins and stuff like that you're going to start getting video cards that are going to be like protein based someday. Like your kids are going to be like growing stuff in their laboratory. Like, oh, I'm building a Pentium chip like in my lab class in eighth grade, you know?
That's probably true.
Out of proteins.
What are you guys? You guys are up on Numenta, Jeff Hawkins' company to kind of reinvent artificial intelligence. Did you read Jeff Hawkins' book? It's really interesting. I don't know. I just wonder if you guys think it's a crock or if there's some legitimacy there. His idea is that you can never have artificial intelligence with the von Neumann machine that the current processor is. It's too linear. It doesn't work like a human brain. So he wants to build chips that work more like a human brain.
Yeah.
You know, the problem I always have with this, when these guys come up with this stuff, is generally what's my motivation? You know, one of the things about
what's my motivation?
It's like all living things have motivation.
Right.
They're trying to avoid pain.
Survival. It's all survival.
There's no way chips can ever get that.
Thank God.
You know, I mean, they don't want to be unplugged. I mean, it's not just not happening. So there's no motivation. So they can never really be genuine thinking.
Have you seen this new documentary, Blade Runner?
It's, are you a replicant? I knew you were a replicant. I thought you were from Brooklyn, but you're a replicant.
All I want is more time.
Yeah, see, that's a perfect example. There's a maybe Ridley Scott knew this ahead of time.
Ever have an itch you can't scratch?
Have you seen? Did you? You must have just seen the new
Oh, it is so gorgeous. The new, I saw it the opening night, and then I went back like five nights later. I saw it twice. It's my favorite film of all time.
The final, what do they call it? The final cut?
Final cut. It is so beautiful. I saw it at the Landmark Theater, which is one of Mark Cuban's, and it's in L.A., and it's the
digital
one with a massive DLP, like double the projection, you know, lumières or whatever, however they rate them. The scenes when they are flying through the city or flying in the big opening scene when they're flying over Los Angeles and it's all smog and whatever, it's so clear that you can see the details on the buildings and the ships. And you can see the console when they're inside the flying car. When they're inside Terrell Corporation, you can see like the details on the walls. When they're in Decker's apartment, you can see that great, you know, architecture when he looks out on the city from his terrace. It's phenomenal. It's like seeing a new movie.
I want to see now he's done like 50 recuts of this thing. He can't sit
still. It's
been
like three or four official things.
More than any movie in history. Apocalypse Now is the only one that's been recut more often than Blade Runner.
Yeah, I think the reason was because it was so ahead of its time. I mean,
he dropped the narration, right? Because the studio made him do the narration because they thought...
Yeah, they made him do narration because people were too stupid to understand it. And then I think what happened was because the film got such a cult following that he just sort of... as opposed to George Lucas, which sort of dumbed the remakes down, he made them more complex and more ambiguous, and sort of listened to the fans. So, you know, putting in the unicorn shot and, you know, is Decker a replicant or not?
He's a replicant. We agree on that, don't we?
It's pretty clear.
It's obvious,
I mean,
yeah.
The question is, was he originally a replicant in the original film? And of course, Harrison Ford says that was never brought up to him by Ridley Scott. And of course, Ridley Scott says, well, I'm a brilliant director. I wouldn't tell him because I'm trying
Harrison
to have him
that. Yeah.
Play, you know, a replicant who doesn't know he's a replicant.
I haven't told you guys.
Oh, yeah. I'm a replicant?
Oh, wait a minute. I did tell you. Well, now here's an interesting replicant. Cyberlover.ru. This is one of those hacker sites that has created a hot, sexy bot that people can buy, put it on their website or whatever. It's got 10 different personalities that are, quote, so lifelike, the victims will hand over photos, phone numbers, and more just to kind of get her to like them better.
Oh, please.
Actually, it could be either gender. So
I have yet to see a bot that works well without, you know, it's like how many, you know, it's like a game you can play with these guys who invent these things. How many clicks does it take before you figure out this is a bunch of bull?
Right.
All you have to do is misspell one word and the thing stops working.
But remember, these poor guys, lonely guys on the internet, they don't want to believe it's a bot. I mean, that's the difference. They're not trying to figure it out. They want to believe it's a her.
Absolutely. It's wish fulfillment.
No, you know, they don't.
The more
you just
more
insulted half your listeners.
They want to believe I'm a her when I go on a Second Life dress.
Well, that's a different story.
Wait a second. You go on Second Life dress as a girl,
no,
Leo?
No.
I'm looking at your Skype avatar right now.
Leona. It's Leona Laporte. Look for Leona Laporte and you'll find
Leona
it.
Leona Laporte.
Hi, big boy. Want to come to my secret 2D lair?
How about a nice game of chess?
Yes.
Thermal nuclear warfare? No, how about chess?
Anyway.
No, the more interesting thing, I think, is using the technology to actually use humans to game other humans. So, like, you know the Ketchba thing. Spammers who want to create, like, a lot of accounts on Yahoo are putting Ketchbas on porn sites. And what they do is, in real time, they have one bot go to Yahoo to get a
They get
a
the captcha. Because they're trying to sign up for Yahoo. They get the captcha. Yeah. And they put it on their site.
Yeah, exactly. Put it on the porn site. So a human trying to get porn types in the Ketchba and gets them their Yahoo account. That is genius.
Is that smart?
Yeah. I mean,
so what you pretend it's a bot, but it's a really human talking to a human.
Absolutely. But they have no idea. It's like, and one is doing the task of the other. That's when like all this Mechanical Turk stuff that, Bezos is doing at Amazon gets really interesting, which is why even bother with artificial intelligence when you have, you know, potentially we'll have billions of people on the internet with billions of hours of spare cycles. Just send out these massive tasks to the hundreds of millions of people out there and let them either do it through a play simulation where they actually think they're playing a game, but they're solving a problem. Or, incentivize them with a small amount of, you know, cash. Or
is that kind of what
it seems to me that these spammers, if they can come up with some of these creative notions, that they could find better ways to make money.
I know, but they wouldn't be as nefarious and they wouldn't feel like outlaws. I mean, part of the reason people do this stuff is because they want to be,
really,
you know, outlaw. Absolutely.
They like it. That explains why they go
outlaw spammer.
That's
boy,
why so something. Well, that's why so many of them go public.
How many, I mean, why do people, you know, smart people try to do heists? I mean, it's like,
right,
they could much easier go work for the man and make $100,000 or $200,000 a year as a programmer, or they can send 10 million spams and try to make $100 in affiliate links or something.
You hey, Calcanis, you are the man.
He's the man.
Wait a sec. I thought you worked for the man. Isn't the man Adam Curry?
I just
he's another one of the mans.
Would one of
oh,
you
okay,
decide?
Because
I'd like to
clear.
Stick it to the man, and I just want to know who to stick it to.
Stick it to you're one of the men too, Leo. You stick it to yourself.
Damn it! It's no fun sticking it to yourself. So did you? So did you see the Microsoft Robo Santa that asked for oral sex?
Yeah. Whoa!
Microsoft actually pulled.
Talk
this
about
product.
Changing the subject.
Well, no, it's related.
Oh,
it's like the bot.
It's a bad visual.
It's like the bot. No, no. This it was an MSN. If you MSN messaged NorthPole@live.com, and it was from Microsoft, and they admit this. You could add this. It's a bot. It was a Santa bot. And if you go to the register, actually, we have a link on the Delicious page. If you go to the register,
you
could get this bot. Some programmer, you could get this bot to say, well, let me see. He said something like, oral sex is fun.
Yeah, oral sex is fun.
Wait a minute. Here it is. Okay. So
this is one of these AI things, right?
It was an AI.
Sex, but I want to chat about something else, right? Yeah. So whatever you said that it doesn't
well,
understand.
No, listen. Now, you tell me. So this is the dialogue. The register says pizza. Santa says, yum, what do you want for Christmas, Elridge? Elridge says, maybe you shouldn't eat so much. You're quite large. Santa says, my elves will get right on that. And what else are you wishing for this year, Elridge?
Maybe you shouldn't eat it.
See if you could get someone else to eat it.
Eat it.
No, thank you. I don't eat things.
Eat it.
See if you could get someone else to eat it.
Eat it.
You want me to eat what? It's fun to talk about oral sex, but I want to chat about something else.
You dirty bastard!
I think you're a dirty bastard. This is an actual transcript.
Wait, did you were you playing a tape or were you acting that out?
I was acting that out.
Yeah,
really?
No, Leo's got the man of a million voices that has not been exploited.
I always wanted to be a dirty Santa.
Hendry. Bob. You've always wanted to be Hendry.
I do. It's kind of like Hendry. So Microsoft actually admitted this and pulled this guy. And now when you ask about pizza, it says, if you need a break to go eat, I'll be right there when you come back.
I like your Santa voice.
Oh, well, come sit on my lap, Jason.
So, oh, no, Santa. I'm feeling very uncomfortable right now.
You know what Santa's going to be given this year? Actually, not going to be given. Two things. Wheeze and Kindles.
You Kindles for $1,500.
$1,500 on eBay. I get did
for
you,
what?
For the Kindle, the Amazon Kindle, the thing
who
that we
heck, who's who, what maniac is going to spend $1,500 for a white elephant?
I bought one, but I paid the normal price for it.
I think that might. You think that's a PR company doing their thing?
Oh, interesting.
It's got to be. Come on. Let's
I mean,
get
I don't mean to be
here.
Cynical, but I am on the call with John Dvorak. So,
no, that's interesting. Would I mean?
I say that's the how the PR companies do it. They get a product, they don't make enough, they sell it out, they put it on eBay for four times as much, and then they schmucks, they buy it later on. Dvorak.org/org.blog.
That's pretty good.
No, it's
thank
not.
You.
He
thank
sounds
you.
Like somebody. He does sound like somebody,
Edward
but it doesn't
G.
sound
Robinson.
Like me.
It's Edward G. Robinson.
No. You know
it's
how I'm doing. I'm doing
a little bit like the cop on The Simpsons.
That's what it is.
It's the frog from Minute Mouse.
Oh,
no,
she's
here. I got Minute Mouse. Yeah,
but the thing. But the thing is, both Chief Wiggum and Minute Mouse are actually doing Edward G. Robinson impressions. That's what you don't know.
Ah, there you go.
No, actually, one of the guys, I forgot who's the guy who does Wiggum's, but he came on Leno one time and says all of his voices on that he does on The Simpsons are bad impressions.
Right. It's a bad
he does
Edward
the bad
G.
Jerry Lewis, yeah, exactly. the bad Edward G. Robinson.
Oh, so he's that professor.
That's the Jerry Lewis. Yeah. And then he does a bad, what's the name of that actor who always played, he was in Easy Rider, played the stoner, you know.
Peter
he
Fonda
does that guy.
Or,
Oh, yeah.
That's Otto. Otto's the bus driver, dude. Anyway, 14. There, that's good. $1,400. Actually, one Kindle sold for $830. You know, I like my Kindle. I actually got a Kindle. I kind of like it. I don't use it all the time, but it's better than the Sony.
Good I deal. Applaud the making it, because I think that it's the, you know, they're getting closer. I mean, we've seen this for a decade now with the ebook stuff. And from what I understand, people who are actually reading it, if you took the price out of it, people reading it say it's a nice reading experience.
It is. It is.
So if you take out the player haters with the nonsensical issues like price, Evdo, and all these other things, like paying for blogs, if you assume that it'll be free, the device itself will be free at some point because they'll make the money in the books, or the device will be free with $5 a year or something like that, or a subscription model will give it to you for free if you subscribe for 2 years, $20.
The thing
like will
be, they'll stop making them by the time this scheme of yours even comes to fruition.
Here's the deal. You pay $100 more than you do for the Sony, but the books are a lot cheaper, and you get lifetime EVDO from Sprint. Right. I mean, it's cool. You buy a book and you get it in like 30 seconds. It's right there. I haven't hooked it up to the computer once.
And you don't have to hook up the computer. I was talking to Ev Williams from Twitter. We were both in Paris for this little web conference, and he had one, which his wife stepped on and broke, but that's a total side.
See, that never happens to a paperback.
And done, but broken, gone.
God, that's terrible.
Brutal, and he has no books to read on the way home. But
No, he's going to have to read the magazines.
Exactly.
Oh, those are
so the interesting thing, though, is like, what is version 2 going to look like? What is version 3 going to look like? And what is the price point, you know? I just disagree with crippling it, though, because why not allow it to be Wi-Fi enabled? Why not allow it to have, you know, Safari browser or Opera and just let people go to town with it? Because then, you know, people can then start coming up with their own uses for it, which is very unlike Jeff Bezos, who is very much a platform guy with S3 and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, let the street do what they want with this technology. Mm-hmm. He's not doing that here, which I find weird.
I wonder how much of that is the publishers that are keeping him from doing that.
There's also piracy.
There's battery life issues too. I mean, if you put Wi-Fi in it, you know, it'll die in 8 hours. You want it to last as long as you can.
This thing's
how heavy
a jerky.
Is it?
Come on.
It's pretty light. It's just a few. It's you know, it's easy to hold in your hand. I've done a lot of reading on it. I bought books on it. It does have a browser. It just doesn't do the formatting properly. So you can't.
Is it lighter than a book?
Oh yeah.
So if it's lighter than a book, then for me, that's one of the problems I have with these book things is that they're heavy.
Yeah.
And like,
it's not just lighter than one book. I got, you know, 50 books in it.
Right. But you only read one at a time.
Gosh, it's definitely lighter than 50 books.
It's not. I don't just read one at a time. I have the Chronicle. I have the Examiner, or not the Examiner.
In a related
Times,
news story, the iPod is lighter than 3,000 albums.
That's true.
No, but that's the way I look
at this. That's the same model, though. Your iPod is your whole record collection. This could be your whole library.
This is the, you remember the Rio MP3 player, the first one that came out?
I've got one right here.
And it was like, what, 128K? You could fit like 10 songs on it? Like you could fit an album on it.
Right.
And it was horribly flawed, but it showed the promise. And I think this thing may have flaws, but I think it shows a lot of promise.
Which means Apple's going to come along and make a better one.
Well, wait, there's a leap of faith here with that assertion. One is that people were clamoring for MP3 technology. They loved it. This college kids were all over it. Everybody was jumping on anything they could that was MP3. True. I don't see that happening with ebooks.
I said my initial reaction to the Kindle was that it was built around a business model, not about around customer need.
There could be something to that. I mean, but here's an idea. Why doesn't the thing support MP3s, or does it?
It does.
Okay, so you can put your music library.
And Audible books.
Yeah. Well, I love Audible.
Hey,
Audible
so do I. Books. Although
here's your opportunity, Leo. Go for it.
I'd like your business advice here real quick before I go into that. So ever since we've been taking Audible ads, and I love them, and certainly we need the money to keep this thing going, but the audience has been going down. And what I'm realizing is these ads are so good, people are going out and getting audiobooks, and they're stopping. They're no longer listening to us.
Audible is that good. Audible is that good. I have to tell you, because Audible's so good that it'll make you it'll go right to the top of your podcast list.
This is good. You're making up for Cory Doctorow last time.
This is
Audible
the,
is great. I mean, you know what I like about Audible is that they protect all that content for you, so you don't have to worry about the authors
Isn't
having their
great?
Work stolen.
Exactly.
And
my thoughts.
We can have a business model that scales and grows, assuring that artists are compensated. So it's a win-win. The artist gets to make money. The user gets to read what they want. Who could be against that? I mean, you'd have to be a communist to be against that.
You know, when Corey was on complaining about their DRM, they played that cut. You know, they brought it to the boardroom and played it for everybody. I hope they do the same for this cut. I think you're absolutely right, Jason Calacanis.
There you go.
Let me change the subject yet
because I want to mention an Audible book.
Oh, okay. Oh. Go for it.
This is called, it's actually a really good book called Crystal Fire. It is the story of John Bardeen, Walter Bratton, and William Shockley and the invention of the transistor in 1947. So it's the full story. It's the birth of the information age, Michael Reardon and Lillian Hodson. And it is available on audiobook. They have some really interesting books about computer history. There's one on ENIAC. All the Silicon Valley history books are there. But Crystal Fire, it's the story of the team at Bell Labs that invented the transistor in 1947. And it's really quite dramatic. Highly recommended. It's available. If you go right now to audible.com/twit, that can be your book. Actually, pick from 45,000 plus books. They're all great. And all protecting the rights of the authors who wrote them, incidentally. And audible.com/TWIT. And we do actually love Audible. I'm glad to have them along. But I just ask, if you listen to audiobooks, and of course you will, because they're great, please keep listening to Twit. Oh, wait a minute. The person who's doing that is not listening anymore. Damn.
Right after Twit finishes, or you can multitask if you're at your desk.
Listen,
you can
to both.
Order some stuff, you put them into your queue, and you're all set.
Audible.com/Twit. We thank them so much for their continued support, despite Cory Doctorow. So,
you know what you can get on there too is they have Chris Anderson's The Long Tail, which is a very good list.
Must reading. Yes.
Must. And John Battelle, his The Search is up there. So, listen, Cory Doctorow may feel that, you know, authors shouldn't get paid. But, you know, hey, some other great authors like John Battelle and Chris Anderson, also very respected in the technology industry, would like to see people get paid.
I could tell you three people who will not be on this show together. Jerry Pournelle, Cory Doctorow, and now Jason Calacanis. The three of you will never appear together. Maybe you and Jerry.
That would be a great show.
Here's my rebuttal to Cory Doctorow. If he's so into free culture and everything like that, why doesn't he waive his like $10,000-$15,000 speaking gigs for the next 10 years? You know, it's like he makes money off the speaking gigs, right? But he gives the books away for free. But if you're an author who can't do speaking gigs, like Jerry Pournelle, maybe he doesn't get $10,000 speaking gigs because he can't talk about, you know, whatever. But maybe he wants to make money off his books. I mean, is it so wrong?
I understand that. But I think that is the issue with the Kindle, in a way, is that, well, you know, I was talking about this last night. I was talking about a great book I had just read, and I said, oh, I'd love to lend it to you, but it's on the Kindle, and I can't. And what about that? Do you guys do that? Do you lend books to friends? Because that's a big part of the culture.
Give it away,
reading.
Yeah.
Yeah, give them a book. You can't do that anymore.
Mm. But these cost a lot less than the print books, right?
And that's exactly what I said. For $9 you could buy it.
It costs less to make, too.
Yeah, they should cost
less. They don't cost anything to make.
Right.
But in terms of the user experience, if I paid $7, $8, $9...
Yeah, but there's something about me lending you a book, don't you think? Like, oh, this, you got to read this. It's a great book.
Yeah, I agree.
There's that pass around thing that goes around with books.
You know what they should do is they should let you send the first three chapters to another person so they could try it.
You could squirt it to them.
Yeah, like the Zoom.
Something about that phrase just.
This show has got some weird sexual undertones. We got oral Santa, oral sex Santa. We have the Russian artificial intelligence.
I'm going to raise the level right now.
Yeah.
According to English gamers, the Wii attracts cockroaches.
What?
Actually, it's Japanese. The Japanese language gaming site Barks claims the Wii gives off a cockroach-friendly frequency that attracts the pests. Have you seen cockroaches around your Wii?
You mean talking about the Nintendo Wii?
No, yeah. Yes. Let's not. Back in the gutter with John.
What?
Yes, I'm talking about the Nintendo Wii, not the other one.
Actually, no. I wonder whether that's.
Do you have a Wii? You have a Wii.
Yeah, of course. But you know,
I'll give you $1,000 for it.
Okay.
Do you have a Wii, Jason?
I have a couple of them. We have them at the office. I got one at home. I've played it for like no more than an hour. I like that Rock Band.
Yeah.
That is the most fun I've had on a video game system since Defender.
Did you see that Activision it won't let Rock Band work with the Guitar Hero guitar?
That's just dumb.
You can't. You can't just bring your, you can't bring your axe from another game over here, man.
Wasn't the whole idea, though, of a software bug, or is that just folklore, that the bug was actually a bug that crawled into a computer and got fried on the chip, and that caused the problem?
No, that actually goes back to Grace Hopper days.
But, now, see, and there is a very famous page in her notebook where she's taped the moth, and she said the first software bug. But as it turns out...
No, I think it was a hardware bug.
Okay, yes, you're right. The first hardware bug. But as it turns out, according to my research, textile workers in 19th century Britain, when they had problems with their jacquard looms, would also say, there's a bug. So it goes way back.
Ah, that makes sense.
Does it really?
Well, I mean, those looms would have a lot of...
That's right.
You know, there's a lot of insects in that fiber.
Exactly. So that's what, anyway, she's kind of credited Grace Hopper with creating bugs, but apparently, no, she didn't. She, in fact, she knew of it. She was making a little play on words. It was a little joke. This is a bug. Anyway, I don't know if that's true or not. But
And I'm sure that the bugs in those jacquard looms probably actually did affect the performance.
Sure.
As opposed to some dead moth next to a tube.
Or a cockroach in your Wii.
Hey, I got to plug a couple of guys.
Please.
Robert Phipps, IT lecturer at West Virginia, and Chris Cooling, who does cooltidbits.net. They both sent me a West Virginia hoodie,
yes,
which doesn't do me any good anymore because they lost the one game they needed to win. So now I feel bad about it. But meanwhile, my team, the Appalachian State Mountaineers, won three in a row. And now I need a three-peat sweatshirt or something from somebody. I'm just... Jason, you don't realize that I use the show to solicit clothes.
I could give you a Yale cap.
Is that what it's come to?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's wow. It's come to. Ever since you lost that PC Magazine column,
so
things
sad.
Have gotten rough for
Wait
you.
Wait a minute. He's still in, aren't you still in PC Mag?
Yeah, of course. He doesn't keep up with anything.
I'm joking. PC Mag still publishes? Oh, my God. I am on eBay right now. I am not kidding. The buy it price for a Kindle, $2,999.
Yeah, but that's
a scam.
Sucker. Yeah, that's the sucker.
Some
price.
Guy selling it to himself. I think it's a publicity stunt.
The question
well,
is, that, what
the
are,
buy
what
it now price.
Yeah, what are the real bid prices so far on that?
I see. Let's see. Seven.
You guys don't like football, apparently.
No. No. Jason's a basketball guy. Ask him about the Knicks. He'll go on for hours.
Oh, the Knicks. So I mean, this is that's typical of a guy like that.
Guy like what?
That you. You'd like the Knicks.
Well-endowed gentleman of a... what? What's he like? What do you mean?
The Knicks.
He's a Knicks lover.
Says it all.
He's from Brooklyn. That's his problem.
No.
Windows,
I'm sorry to hear
there
that.
Was a really great blog posting. I got to find it because I want to give the guy credit. Talking about the latest version of Windows and everything that went wrong with Vista has been fixed in this new version of Windows. It's faster, more reliable, all the problems have gone. And for those of you who really put down Microsoft's development team, these guys know what they're doing. Windows XP, it's amazing. New from Microsoft. I loved it. And when you read it, you go, that actually makes sense. It is an improvement. The upgrade is XP.
Yeah. The guy was like, yeah, and it's got very cute, like soft, bubbly, retro.
Very retro.
User interface.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll find the
new Mac operating system. I always wait a couple of weeks and, you know, they got the patches out and it's really nice. It feels
like
more
Leopard.
Stable.
Yeah, I like Leopard. Although I think Apple has the same problem Microsoft does, which is essentially there's nothing much new you can do. So you end up screwing stuff up just because for the sake of change. You just change for the sake of change. You guys, you can stop now. XP, fine.
The desktop spaces is probably the best feature. We can switch between different window configurations. That's existed in third party apps, but
but give it a chance because it gets confused and you start losing windows.
You know, I don't use that feature. I just find if you have enough monitors, you don't need to use it.
How many monitors do you have, John?
I only have two, but that's all you need to make,
what size?
Instead of four spaces, he just has four 30 inch displays. Who needs spaces?
They're not 30-inch, but they're big.
Oh, because I have two 30-inch at home and a 30 and 224s are working.
So what would you need to swap your desktop for if you got
all
that space?
But it's just nice to have the
app. So do you have the 30 in the middle and the 224s like wings?
Exactly, and I turn them landscape, whatever. Flip them so they have the long pages so I can...
Profile.
I put IRC chat on there. I put, my iTunes up there, whatever. But I have three 30-inches, but it's too much. It's too wide. When you have three 30-inches, so you can't see the second half of the wingman. So sort of a waste. What I want them to make is
your peripheral vision doesn't go far enough. You can't.
Exactly,
actually,
that's exactly right. So what I want them to make is a curved monitor. So if they can take the 30-inch monitor and make it, I don't know, another couple of inches on each side, 8 inches, and then have it curve a little bit, that would be the $5,000 monitor. I don't know why they don't have a monitor.
There's a monitor made by some guys that you go into. You sit in this, and it's like you're in a dome. Have you ever seen this thing? It's actually quite interesting.
I've done a lot of research into this stuff, and it's sort of like ever since the 30-inch monitor came out, they stopped advancing it.
Well, you can't get any bigger. Can you get any bigger? Could you reasonably get any bigger?
Of course. I mean, if people are having 2 30-inch monitors, or Al Gore's got 3, of course you can get bigger.
Right. Yeah.
So,
I'm sitting in front of a 30 and a 24, but I do need another 24 on the left.
You got to go 224.
Al Gore's got three of them. Isn't that a global warming thing? That's a lousy carbon footprint, I'll tell you right now.
No kidding. Well, I need more.
I think he lives in like an 8,000 square foot house or something, like just him and his wife. Yeah. And, you know,
it's some problems there.
Yeah.
But I don't want to knock out because he's really doing everything he can for the world.
I'm doing my part. I ordered a Tesla.
Did you?
Yep.
The $100,000 Tesla?
110 plus tax.
Wow, who's counting after the first 100? It's all. And this is the one that goes 0 to 60 in like 3 seconds, right?
It goes 4 seconds.
Four? Really? Wow.
Yeah, it's as fast as
when are you going to get delivery?
I think they're going to start in the second quarter. I got the inside dope on the whole thing. They just basically wanted to get the best possible transmission in it, and so they went through 3 transmissions. And the first one would have been good enough. It just they're kind of being kind of obsessive about it. So
I thought it's electric.
It still has a transmission though, and the transmission is very important because it uses the transmission to, I think, you know, conserve the batteries, you know, optimize the batteries. Mm. So
this is an awesome car. I would love to see this.
I can't wait.
It's going to pin your head to the back of the seat, though.
Well, I have a Corvette right now, so it's the same speed from 0 to 60 as the Corvette and the Ferrari F430. So it's all the same speed, but one of them, you know, has no noise when you do it, and it gets 250-mile range, and it costs nothing because you're doing it off of electrical.
Right.
And you can put I'm going to put some solar panels on the garage. And so I will be 100% off the grid.
No, you can't get enough juice out of the solar panels.
Yes, because I only drive like 10, 15 miles a day. I drive to my office and back. It's 4 miles away. So I will be 100% off the grid because they put a battery pack and you charge your battery pack in your house. The battery pack in your house is charging all day long.
Oh, you come so you off, just swap you plug it out.
Yeah, well, no, you plug it in. Oh. You plug into the battery pack, which has been charging all day. So I'll get home at night. It'll be charged from the sun. And then there's also these little windmills you can get that cost like $30,000.
And then the wind from driving 0 to 64 seconds charges the car.
Let me get this safe. Let me get this straight. $110,000 car, $30,000 windmill, solar panels, probably $10,000.
But you're saving
money.
Yeah,
that's a hell of a deal. You know, I don't know if my 66 Datsun counts, but it only cost me $4 a week to run.
Hey, Moore's Law, baby. It basically means that this car is going to they're going to pay you $7 to take this car in another 4 years.
I'm just glad you're buying this so that you're making it possible for the rest of us, Jason, because you're funding this, you're moving it forward. And then
I think that's the idea. Also, I just want to have the car that is,
cool.
you know,
it
not available
so
to anybody
cool.
else. Yeah.
Oh.
Did you put down a deposit?
Yeah.
$5,000.
How much?
$5,000, baby.
Oh, it's $5,000?
It's only $5,000 right now. But, however, I let them know that if one of the people on the 100 list or the, you know, first 200 who paid full fare drops out, I want their spot and I'll pay the full fare. I don't know if they'll do it or not, but I doubt it.
They'll be giving you a call. I think you'll be hearing from Mr. Tesla. His hair may be sticking straight up, but you'll be hearing from him.
I think it's, you know, this is why I'm sort of very optimistic. I think the whole global warming thing is going to be solved like in the next 10 years because of free markets. Everybody wants to drive an electric car. Everybody wants to have a solar panel on their roof. Everybody wants to live in a clean city with great air.
But then we'll all be dead from staph infections that can't be cured from penicillin.
You got to go to Duluth once in a while and hang out. Get out of the valley.
Why?
I'm not in the valley. I'm in Los Angeles.
Worse.
It is worse. You're correct on that one. Yo, man, go to Shanghai, man. You can't even breathe in that town.
You're saying real people won't do this? John, is that what you're saying?
I don't think I don't think the average person living in the Midwest cares about the Tesla or the electric car or solar panels. To be honest about it, they
what do they care about?
Well, they don't care about that. I mean, they care about what they care about. They care about their family, maybe. They care about their neighbors. They,
that's what this is all
care about the job
saving
they have.
The world for your kids.
I don't think they're. I think that they. A lot of people believe the, this saving the world stuff is a. You know, save yourself.
I think that I agree that that is how people in our generation or your generation think, but I think this younger generation has a very like. Obsessive environmental bent to them. And I think like if you drive you know, an SUV or a Hummer, where our generation thought that was kind of cool, they're like, not cool, you know? And I think
don't know what generation thought it was cool to drive a Hummer, to be honest about it.
Well, like but an SUV the, or a truck.
Somebody just like sent me a YouTube
families that
a YouTube video somebody using a Tesla coil to protect their car. See, now if you could do that. So if somebody touches your Tesla car, their Tesla coil goes off, and that'd be cool.
Isn't the thing fiberglass?
Oh, it must be real light, right? All right, let's talk about... All right, you want to talk speculative future? Alexander Zaitsev. No? No, thanks. Alexander Zaitsev.
How about some news stories?
This is
here.
A news story. Alexander Zaitsev, chief scientist at the Russian Academy of Sciences Institute of Radio Engineering and Electronics, has dumped something very controversial. He has access to one of the most powerful radio transmitters on Earth, and he's sending aliens saying, come on, we're over here. Look over here. Now, this is kind of what they call active SETI, instead of waiting and seeing electronic signals. And people are up in arms because
they saw Independence Day once too often.
They read a little too much sci-fi. But also, some people say, well, how dare this guy, you know, speak for us and announce the Earth's existence, our existence? We don't know what's out there.
You know, if there's anything
out there.
Yeah,
what if this guy insults people? They could come over and, you know, do an Independence Day.
He's speaking for the whole planet.
Let's get Bobby Slayton up there to make some commentary. So,
your wife. I slept with her.
One of the things that has always fascinated me about this whole concept is that if there's some technology or there's some species or something that flies around, I mean, we don't even know the size of ants, but whatever the case is, what's the likelihood of them to have developed the exact same radio technologies that we have?
Well, they wouldn't, but they would be monitoring those spectrums for pattern.
There is actually a limited amount of spectrum out there, so it would make sense.
It's not a hard thing to do. We're doing that, too.
I mean, we're running out of spectrum, right?
You're not looking for I Love Lucy. You're just looking for organization.
One of the things that's interesting, I was at this EG conference, which is sort of like a TED-type conference out here, and they were saying that our radio wave technology, whatever we look out into space with, was not really able to see planets like Earth at a distance that well. But the technology is getting better, and that soon we're going to be able to actually see planets that match our distance from a sun.
C-class, and, you know, Goldilocks planets,
Right, so when that happens, we're going to actually know where they all are, so we could actually do things like target them or listen to them and tune into them. We just don't know where they are.
That's what this guy's doing. He's aiming it at where it seems likely that there'd be an Earth-like planet.
It's definitely got to be something out there. I mean, it's
well, just, that's the Fermi paradox now you're run up against here.
Enrico Fermi,
the famous physicist, said that there's clearly the probability is there's intelligent life out there, but where the hell's the evidence? Where are they?
The other thing, well, I mean, we're the evidence, but
besides us.
But if we can exist in a world of infinite possibilities, it's going to happen.
Exactly.
The question is, would we ever connect? And that's the answer to that may be never. So then it becomes moot. If it does exist and you can never connect with it, then what's the point? I mean, what if our relationship with this foreign planet is that we can send messages back and forth and we're basically got pen pals?
Yeah.
I mean, it's.
They might
sort of
tell us something.
Right?
They might say, hey, you know, that Tesla car, that's going to blow up. They might say something of use.
I think they'd be dead by the time the message even got there.
True.
If you got one going back and forth in one
thousands
iteration, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. It'd be great if they started like sending us wisdom that was just like, you know, conventional wisdom, you know.
Fire. Investigate fire.
Yeah, a stitch in time saves nine.
This thing called the wheel. Like, do you have one?
So don't let your daughter marry a musician.
All right, I see a great science fiction book here where you got all this trouble. You got
what if we had like all 10 planets all talking to each other, but they can never make contact? So all we do is send like the best jokes around, and it becomes like an IRC channel.
We're on the alien mailing list, the alien joke mailing list.
Yeah, it becomes like Usenet. It could be like the best use we come up with for interstellar communications is like a Usenet group.
The word of the year for 2007, according to the the dictionary gurus at Merriam-Webster. Woot!
Woot woot!
W00T. How many years has this been around?
Couple, like I think I first heard it 2 or 3 years ago.
Longer than that.
A video game 4 years ago.
Well, I think I heard it, Jason. It seems fairly recent.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, somebody sent me an email explaining where or at least what he thought was the origins, because he was listening to some gamer's podcast, and it stems from the common reference to wow. When you find somebody drops something in a
loot, you get loot.
Loot. But then where did the two zeros come from?
It's leet speed.
That's hacker speed.
Yeah, it's leet speed.
Yeah.
Or some say it's wheat. Yeah, hacksaws. We owned the other team. I don't know. Corey uses woot all the time.
There's WHOOT, which is like woot, there it is, but that's different.
Who uses that?
That's that song. There it is. Something like basketball song.
Oh, right. Yeah, there's some old pre-rapper song or something that was. Yeah, it's used in games. You're right.
Right. Huh. So I think that might have been a precursor to it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. So, well, anyway, Merriam-Webster obviously has decided.
Bored. They're bored.
They got nothing better to do. It's a great press release. You know you're going to get coverage. People are going to write about it.
And they have to appeal to that next internet generation.
Right.
Because they're going to need a solution for their encyclopedic needs.
Number two word of the year? Any guesses? Facebook.
No, as a verb.
Nobody uses Facebook as a verb. I'll Facebook
I know, they
that.
Don't. That's what I say. In fact, I did
never
a
heard
five.
Anybody say Facebook me.
No. Google, yes. I'll Google.
By the way, you know, it's like, you know, my reference is like, well, how would you use it? It's like, yeah, hey, I got a hold of Jill the other day and I Facebooked her.
That sounds awful.
It does. It doesn't sound right.
That sounds terrible.
The show is again going in the wrong direction. Can we steer the ship?
No, you know.
It's because you're on it. This is your fault, Jason.
It clearly
we've always
is.
We've always run a clean ship here.
I didn't suggest any of the stories.
It is
yet.
All of a sudden. I don't know what happened. It must be you, Jason, because it's
must be.
Yeah.
I think it's a combination of John and I.
Well, wait till you see the title for this show. I'm going back and forth between John's nuts and Jason's 30 inchers. So it's one or the other. You know, I keep track of this as the show goes by. I consider titles as we go, and that those are the two top contenders. So woot! There's his nuts again.
Them's the nuts.
Woot, Facebook. Now, I don't know where these other top 10 words come from. I mean, why these? I don't know why conundrum is the third. Why would conundrum be the word of the year?
I thought Bluetooth was the third one.
Well, I'm at Merriam-Webster's site. Conundrum, oh, okay. Quixotic, blame storm. I like that. Have you ever heard that? Blame? That sounds like an internet word. A blame
I thought
storm.
Surge was one of the big words.
Surge should be a big word.
Agree.
Wait,
does the word have to be a new word?
No, it just has to be the word of the year people are using a lot.
Oh,
the words. Let's see. I guess it's a vote, based on votes from visitors to the Merriam-Webster website.
No, the Woot people must have gotten. That's the deal.
Oh, that's what happened. The Woot people.
Yeah, I think
got
they gamed it.
They gamed it. They've been gamed. That's gamed. Now there's the word of the year. Here's another one. Number six is sardoodledom.
Sardoodle.
Sardoodledom.
I never even heard of this word.
That's some Harry Potter reference or something, I'm guessing.
Mechanically contrived plot structure and stereotyped or unrealistic characterization in drama.
What? I didn't go to
graduate
school.
It's a great word. I never heard of it. It's a great word, sardoodledom.
Sardoodle, well, like sardonic.
Because it sounds funny.
Yeah, well, that makes it a good word. Pecksniffian, you would know that, John.
No.
After Seth Picksniff, the character in Martin Chuzzlewit.
Oh yes, right. Dickens.
Of course, Dickens. Of course. Aren't you a great Dickensian scholar? I thought you were. Oh no, I'm sorry. That's Spengler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I read. Yeah. Spengler. You're thinking Spengler. Mixing me up with
Spengler. Mixing you up with
another. Although I do read a lot of Dickens only for a structure because it's like writing amazing. Nobody can do anymore.
Oh, amazing. At least not over 4,000 pages like he did. So Pennsylvania man brought his computer in 2004, brought his computer to a Circuit City store in Wyomissing, Pennsylvania, and asked them to install a DVD burner. Didn't, by the way, didn't take the child porn off his hard drive.
No.
Technicians.
Dope, here we go again.
Whoops. Technicians were testing. Now, this is where it gets a little weird. The technicians at Circuit City wanted to test the DVD burner's new software by searching for video files to play back. This makes no sense, by the way.
Yeah, why wouldn't they have their own DVD full of test files?
Exactly.
Yeah, why wouldn't they just burn a DVD of anything?
So they searched for video files, and they found some files that, according to the name, appeared to be pornographic in nature.
Yes.
And the guy got arrested. But now,
I think is there any evidence? I mean, this kind of thing is really a problem because it seems to me that those guys could have just as easily, because they had full control of the machine, planted that stuff.
Well, exactly. So
also, the guy's machine could have been a slave, by some adware or spyware could have. And then also, people are now using this peer-to-peer backup system for unlimited
good
storage.
Point.
Have you heard about this?
No.
Yeah.
So there's this new peer-to-peer thing. And so if you don't want to spend $50 on Moxie and have like a secure connection and back up yourself securely with a third party, you can back it up on other
somebody else's drive.
And which I think is crazy.
Basically. No, not going to do it.
But it's encrypted, right? Because we know encryption is impossible to break. And So
you could be back. You could be storing all sorts of crap for somebody.
Who's going to use these kind of systems? I mean, right. The people who use these systems are people with something to hide and who want to be anonymous. So
he appealed it to the Superior Court of Pennsylvania. They overturned. They overturned the appeal. They said, no, this is a legitimate. The court ruled the technicians weren't randomly perusing the drive for a contraband, but were testing its functioning in a commercially accepted manner. They were searching for, this is the best part, Codex, CODE X.
Yeah.
You know what? These guys are explaining how they found it a little bit too much.
No, really? We were looking for Codex.
They should have just said, we were going to burn a DVD, and we went into the My Videos file
and
just to test to make sure it's working.
Yeah.
And boom, what did we find? Things
Codex.
With a weird name.
It's so funny how little the courts seem to understand technology. And then they show up.
It's frightening.
It's really frightening. 95%
those are the people who actually get to make the laws, involved in it.
That's right.
I have an anecdote. So, when I was an expert witness in a case where the Hayes modem code was under attack, or there was some licensing.
The ATDT?
Yeah, ATDT.
It was the AT. Anyway, there's some timing issues involved with the space. What happened was Hayes didn't patent it correctly, and they did it after the fact. It was late, and, there was all these issues. So anyway, they went through a big rigmarole in this case, and it ended up they found the party that was trying to get, not be sued by Hayes for stealing the patent. They lost. The Hayes won. And then when they grilled the jury over it, it had nothing to – the reason that they all chose in favor of Hayes, and this is the thing that the lawyers found hilarious, was because on the Hayes modem plastic box, it said patent pending, which was a patent specifically to the plastic that made the modem. It had nothing to do with the AT command set at all. But because
plastic.
That was on the box, it said patent pending, they lost the case because of this kind of idiocy. This is the kind of thing that goes on. It's really pathetic.
So get this. When Sprint and Nextel merged, they had to, they had to merge their billing. They had to merge all the stuff they charge. I didn't realize this. You probably have noticed on your bill something called the Federal Programs Cost Recovery Fee. Which sounds like it's something mandated by the government. Turns out they're just charging you for the taxes they have to pay. So they just put that on there. And Nextel was charging customers $1.55 a month. And Sprint was charging customers 55 cents a month. So what do you think Sprint did?
Raise the price.
Yeah, of course. They renamed it to an administrative charge, 75-cent administrative charge, and a 20-cent regulatory charge, none of which is required by the government. It's just, he says, the Sprint spokesman, John Taylor, these fees are offset the high tax burden the industry faces.
Now they can put anything they want on there and people just pay it.
I think I should start doing that. Just put a federal, I'm going to put a federal program's cost recovery fee on everything I do.
Right, that's the tax.
That's what it's called. This is the tax I have to pay, so pay me more. So I don't have to pay the tax. How did the cell phone companies get away with this? I'm very excited by, I hope Verizon, when they say they want to open their network, really does begin something. And not
it
just...
It's not going to... These guys are going to continue to gouge the public as long as they can. There's not all these promises are going to go nowhere. This is why I use burners.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. That I was, it's cool.
When I was in Paris last week, I was Twittering and I'm with Ev Williams and I'm like, my Twitter's not working. What's wrong with the system? He's like, no, that's not us. That's a message from your provider. And I was like, this is both, you know, and so then I started using, there's a BlackBerry Twitter application called Twitterberry, which is awesome. So
that,
it uses the web to do it. It's
right.
You have it?
Yeah, I use it.
Oh, it's brilliant. So you don't have to get SMS charges. So I'm like, okay, fine. Then I get online the other day and it turns out T-Mobile turned off Twitter.
Yep.
Right.
And
it's a big news item.
Now they're just blocking the short code. They're blocking the 40404 short code, the Twitter short code, right?
Yeah, I guess. But I mean, the...
So you could still use a T-Mobile phone as I am with Twitter, with Twitterberry.
I know, it's just like, but probably a third of what I use my phone for is Twitter. So if like they're going to start screwing with it, I'm going to switch providers. I'm just getting so tired. I just want an IP-based phone, I want to be done with these people.
Well, just be glad you're not Piotr Stanazik. He's a 22-year-old oil and gas well tester in northern Alberta. He was using his new cell phone as a modem for his computer. He has a $10 unlimited browser plan from Bell Mobility, which is the Canadian cell phone company. Got a bill for $85,000.
Mm.
He was downloading big files.
But that unlimited isn't as unlimited as it used to be, huh?
No. He complained to the phone company. They said, look, for goodwill reasons, we're not going to charge you $85,000 because...
$8,500 for you? $8,500.
Well, basically...
Drop a zero.
$3,400. That's all.
$3,400.
That's all. $3,400.
Oh, kicking fiber to his house.
Jeez. Well, and I guess, you know, he's to be... He's to be... I mean, I guess he, you know, he didn't realize that using his cell phone as a modem would be using minutes, but must have been using it like nonstop to get that kind of a bill.
It's just ridiculous.
I'm so glad. You know, it's actually worse in Canada. They don't have any flat rate data plans, so you can't do it.
I was in Europe one time, and I was trying to download some stuff that was large in size, and like, it kept stopping. So I'm like, what the heck is going on? Why is it stopping? And I called up the support line. I'm in Germany. And she's like, you know, it's 250 meg download limit. Oh. I'm like, well, it says $24.95 a day. And she's like, did you read the, you know, the user fine. Agreement? I'm like, the 8-page user agreement in minus one font. And
so,
in fact, a lot of times I've been in Europe and I've had to buy, you know, you buy a card or something at some of these places and you use it, you know, it's supposed to be for the whole day and then craps out in about an hour. You got to use another card. But anyway, since you were at the low web, can you give us a little a report on what happened there? What was going on and was it then worth going to?
Well, this is the fourth one they've had in like.
And explain
almost,
what it is.
Doesn't
by the way.
Le Web sound like a joke?
The Web 3.
Do they really call
like
it Le Web?
Yeah, Le Web.
It's basically like the Web 2.0 conference here. So,
but they're French, so it has to be 3.0 there.
But it's for all of Europe, so it really is probably 5 or 10% French-based, but it's really all of Europe comes to it. They had like 2 or 3,000 people at this thing.
Wow.
It was huge. And so they brought in like Scoble, Ev Williams, Dave Weiner, O'Malik, you know, just...
the
Mike
usual
Arrington.
Suspects, Jason Calacanis.
And it was like a mini like rock tour or something like that because what's happened over the last couple of years,
it's like
I guess,
one of those Motown concerts.
It's exactly what it's like because of the like Valleywag, you know, blogging thing, tech meme. people in Europe are, you know, sit there and read Tech Meme and Valleywag, wow, and they get to know, like,
they're celebrities,
you know, 30 personalities. And then when you get there, they're, you know, like, oh, yeah, you remember your thing on Valleywag where they said that your dog did, you know, this. And then, you know, it's wild. But it was...
Well, did anything come of it more than just, you know, celebrity jock sniffing?
It was like, I'm sure there's business going on there now because people are paying a lot of money to go there. So I think the European market, there's a lot of business going on there, like people buying advertising, people buying software, syndicating stuff. So it's sort of like, you know, when PCs became a big industry, what was the big PC event? PC Expo? Or,
I don't know. Well, it's Comdex, like, was the big
Comdex, one. Right. It's at a certain point, it just becomes like a trade show where a bunch of salespeople show up and trade business cards. And it seems like it's getting to that point. So sort of like when Internet World jumped the shark, it feels like it's getting to the point where it's a business event. You know, it's a trade show. There were there were like 30 booths. It's a trade show, which is good. I mean, it means there's a business there. But when I went 3 years ago, there were like 400 people, you know.
Did you get anything out of it? I mean, is there anything that you can report on that would interest anyone that listens to this?
There was no breaking news. We broke a little news for Mahalo, but nothing, you know, major got broken there. It's not like it was Web 2.0 or the TechCrunch event where we had specific items breaking at it. No, it's... Like a place where all the people are to get together. Yes. Moving on.
Drinking club.
Moving on.
Drinking and sniffing. It's fine. It's good. So we were talking about text messaging. You know that I just saw an article that said that in Britain, anyway, text messaging to break up with your girl is becoming very popular. We saw it happen with Kevin Federline when Brittany broke up with him on television in Canada. But according to a survey, 15% of the 2,194 Brits surveyed said they had been dumped by text or email.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was about to say, can we replace text with email and do this story in 97?
Yeah, well, I don't know.
I remember this story the first, you know, time around.
Yeah. I think that's cold.
Of course it's cold.
I took your advice the last time you were on, Jason. You said you should add everybody on Facebook. And so I have, and I have some, I don't know, some like 3,000 friends now on Facebook. But what's fun is to read the news feed and watch people break up, get in hookup.
That is weird.
Half the news feed, you know, Roland is now single. Max and Dolly ended their relationship. I'm reading my feed. Jason is now single. Drew went from being single to it's complicated. Margie
is
now married.
That's weird stuff. Katie
ended their relationship. I mean, there's tons of this. This is one page.
I have a friend who's been married for like over 10 years. He's got kids, a whole bit. And like, I guess his wife just got on Facebook. So it said like, you know, this person, you know, Jim and Cindy are now married. So I took a screen grab of it and I sent it to him. I was like, congratulations. I was waiting for you to make an honorable
woman of her.
You know, lady out of her.
Yeah. It's really gets to be an interesting village when you have lots of Facebook friends. Something weird happens. It's just a community. And there's this feed becomes very fascinating to see all the people breaking up alone. Those were all real. I wasn't making them up.
It's all marketing. I'm convinced that all these social networks are like a way to market yourself to your friends and associates.
Oh, interesting. But you see everything as marketing. That might be your bias.
It's sort of like when you go out with your friends and you don't
market to your friends, Jason.
You don't, but think about it this way. You say, what have you been up to? And your friend tells you what they've been up to. And they say, oh, well, what have you been up to? And they do that, right?
Right.
So that's just, you know, chit-chat is what we would call it.
It's called relationship. It's not marketing.
Exactly. However, when you start having thousands of people hooked up together and it starts going by on a daily basis, it starts to feel like marketing.
Yeah.
And specifically because you don't know, you know, but 20 of them.
Well, that's what Twitter feels like to me now. That's funny because I took a Twitter hiatus. I stopped in April and came back last month. And all of a sudden, everything on Twitter is marketing. It's all
absolutely.
Read my articles. You know, this is what I'm doing. I'm here doing this.
Yeah, although, you know, I did the first Twitter narrative this week. I left my passport and like $3,000 in my safe. Ooh. And I'm at the airport. I'm like, you get that sinking feeling when you check in?
Ooh.
And I'm like, oh, my God. So I call the hotel. I give them the code. They grab the money. They grab the passport. I put them on the phone with the person, the agent at the desk. And I say, whatever it takes, hire a motorcycle and have them get to the airport. They hire a motorcycle messenger. and like they're holding the gate for me, and the messenger's coming on bicycle, and the guy's like, you have 6 minutes left, and I'm calling the bike messenger, he's 3 minutes. All of a sudden the bike messenger comes flying up on the sidewalk, and I was Twittering the whole thing.
Oh, that's cool.
Twittering, going through security, and I was taking pictures and emailing them to my Flickr account. So if you go on my Flickr account, Jason Calacanis, one word, no spaces, no dashes, no.org, and you look at it, you'll see pictures of me, of the bicycle coming up, and there were like,
I think that's kind of interesting,
dozens of people living the drama with me. Yeah. And it sort of made it fun, you know, and I didn't have, the sinking feeling went away, which was like, you know, and then everybody starts like, oh, well, if you have to stay in Paris another night, let me take you to dinner. And that's what I do. That's what I use Twitter for now, is when I'm in a different city, I'm like, anybody want to go get Chinese food? Boom. I get like 100 emails and I just go to dinner with random people.
I'm sorry I missed this whole thing. I'm reading it right now. It was all December 14th.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Why do you carry $3,000 in cash with you?
I knew you'd pick that up, John. That's
it's just how I
chump change.
That's just how I roll.
Yeah.
Well, no, I grew up 20,000. What's three is nothing.
But I grew up in Brooklyn, like carry a roll. You know, with the rubber band around it. So I just
Do you carry a roll?
I always carry a roll. I feel naked if I go out without a roll in my pocket. It's just, my dad was always like, you have to have some cash with you.
So they wonder if you're happy to see him, or is that a roll in your pocket?
So do you don't use a money clip, you use a rubber band?
Well, no, because that was when I grew up in Brooklyn. You always knew a fake gangster from a real gangster based on their roll.
Like what bills are on top?
What bills are on top, if they're using a rubber band or some Tiffany, you know, silly thing, you know. If you're a real gangster, you cannot, there's no money clip that's going to hold your roll,
right?
You know, and real gangsters, they, you know, they start at 20s. If they have singles and stuff like that, they keep that in another pocket, they just throw that away,
right?
You know, you start with 20s and move up. So if you got a nice size roll, it's, you know, basically starts at the size of, like, if you put two golf balls in your hand, that'd be like that's a decent size knot. They call it a knot too. So I always like to have a decent size knot, and I basically weigh it against my BlackBerry. It's got to weigh the same as my BlackBerry because I keep one in one pocket, one in the other.
I think we have.
So
a new
you're
title.
Telling us that
Jason.
You're a gangster? I'm not getting this.
He's a gangster.
That's just gangster style.
Jason's decent size knot.
Even all my life, I wanted to be a gangster.
Well, it's true. In The Sopranos and all those movies, they do. They take out the roll, they peel off a couple of hundreds, and they give it to the
cashier. I always peel off. I'm always peeling off for people.
I love that.
I piece people off all the time.
I think that's a very nice... There's something
about
that. I
love to piece people off.
What do you call it? Piece people off?
Piece. Like a piece. You give them a piece.
I give you a piece.
Piece people off.
Piece
I tip
off.
Everybody. In Los Angeles, nobody gets tipped. It's unbelievable. People are so cheap. Because celebrity is the tip out here. You know, like, oh, you got to open the door for, you know, whoever, and that's the tip.
Huh. So you like to share the wealth. You like to spread
it
around.
Jason, are you a big tipper?
Absurd tipper. Like, literally absurd. My wife is like, that's so unnecessary. Well, I grew up as a waiter.
I could dig it. I do the same thing. I over-tip, too.
I don't like to give a lot to charity. I mean, I do give some to charities, but what I do is I just give huge tips because I grew up as a waiter. I was broke my whole life.
Yeah, actually, a lot of people that worked in the restaurant business seem to be big tippers.
Oh, yeah, because we know what it's like.
50%.
Yeah.
50% is my standard.
50?
50.
Oh, I'm a punter. 50. Wow.
Yeah, like 30, 40, 50. Yeah, I mean.
30, I
can
see.
And that's going down.
Yeah.
No. I'm saying, like, I could see if the service wasn't good, I wouldn't give 50. But if it's really good service, if it's $100, I get 150, 140, something like that. God, what's the difference?
I hate to go back to
the tech news.
It's admirable.
I like that. I like a big tipper.
I think that's great.
I just think. You know, like, people are like, oh, the working man is always the person who gets squeezed, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, if you give a good tip, it, like, makes somebody's day. Because I was a waiter. That's how I got through school and whatever. And when I was a kid, it's like somebody gives you a 50% tip instead of a 20% tip. It makes your night. And it only happens once every 10 nights.
Right. Right.
So why not be a gangster?
Are you a big tipper, John?
No.
Yeah,
you have to ask that question.
Doesn't seem like he would.
I don't usually pick up the tab. I mean, I would be a big tipper, but you know, mostly since I'm a starving writer, I have to like require other people to pay for the whole damn thing. And I hope that they're big tippers, which is why I like Jason.
I like going to dinner with Jason.
Don't buy a Mac. Hey, I got a tip. The Kindle's a piece of crap.
I hate that thing.
Don't buy a Mac.
I think we should just wrap this up. There's other news, but I hardly even want to go on because I think this is much more interesting.
I got a tip for you. The iPhone's a piece of crap.
Piece of crap.
Online ad spending by 2011. See, now Jason would have some insight.
This is actually an interesting story. I can have give some insight on the story.
This is e-marketer, well, right?
The thing is, they're like, oh, online ad spending is slowing.
Yeah, but.
But, okay, it's slowing because the numbers are getting so huge.
It's going to increase, they say, 29% next year. By 20,
yeah, growth is slowing,
growth
but the numbers
are slowing. Exactly.
Yeah, there's a big difference between slowing and growth is slowing.
No, it's growing. It's going to continue to grow. By 2011, eMarketer says $42 billion in online advertising.
Hello.
But that'll only be a 12% increase from 2010. And by the way, I have no idea how they could possibly know this. We're talking 5 years from now.
They all come up with different. What they do is, I think they talk to marketers and they look at how they've shifted spending and, you know, where they anticipate shifting spending, and then they talk to the people who are selling ads, so they can look at like AOL and Yahoo and Google and look at their historic rates and say, okay, if Google grows 50% as fast and Yahoo grows 7% and AOL grows 3%, and then they do it from both the buy and the sell side. And
you can get pretty close to the number if you do enough work.
So. I guess the question is, would you be nuts to launch a paper magazine or a mainstream media property at this point?
Absolutely.
All the ads moving away. Well, what's $42 billion? What does that mean? How does that compare?
In the bucket compared to the big numbers.
Well, it's more than...
People are launching magazines and doing fine.
Really?
Ooh.
There's always room for a great product, but they're not launching magazines like they used to. I mean, Condé Nast with Portfolio, most people consider that the last great magazine launch, because you know they used to launch $20, $30, $40 million magazines on a pretty regular basis, a couple a year. They're just not doing that anymore.
Nobody's going to launch a new TV network. Mainstream media doesn't seem like it's in too good shape, especially if you get this kind of advertising money moving away. I mean, I presume if it's growing in online, it's growing because it's shrinking somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, most people think that radio is down, TV is down. Outdoor is flat. TV, some people argue, is flat. But, you know, the growth in online is so great that on a percentage basis, I think it's going to keep taking share.
And where's it going to be, Jason? Is it going to be banner ads? Is it going to be podcast ads? What kind of advertising?
Well, video advertising is huge growth.
Video.
Because it hasn't previously existed. So on a percentage basis, it's going to seem huge. But the most effective advertising online is direct marketing style, which means text ads, which means typically search.
Google.
Text ads are the most effective for marketers because they can track them and they can see them through to a transaction, and they only pay by click. So it's really easy for advertisers to spend money there. As a matter of fact, what's hard is for them to spend a lot of money there because there's a limited amount of inventory. You know, there's only so many people who type in Volvo, you know, S430 or something, you know, per day, and everybody's fighting over those same people.
Well,
so
now they don't want to pay for click, they want to pay for action.
Yeah, and you know, it's just arbitrage, because if you move to that model, then
you just charge more.
That's affiliate revenue, and you can basically then charge more. And you know, if you sell a Kindle, I think you make $50 or $40 or something in the Amazon affiliate program. So
39 bucks, I think it is.
Yeah, so if you make 39 and you can sell one every 1,000 out of every 1,000 clicks, well, then you're making a $39 CPM. It's incredible. If you sell one out of every, you know, 2,000, $20 CPM, it's still very respectable.
Still very good,
yeah. Yeah, I'd like to challenge somebody to get those numbers.
Well, when we did Weblogs Inc. and I was at AOL, we were RPMing revenue.
No, I'm talking about those numbers on the Kindle.
Oh, on the Kindle, yeah.
Maybe not the Kindle.
Yeah.
No, but I certainly do all the associate links I can. I mean, I think that's a very lucrative model, actually.
Affiliate links work and comparison shopping engines work. I mean, basically, every time there is a recession, that's when the TV and the radio and those people, magazines, are going to feel it, because what happens is there's a flight to quality, there's a flight to being able to track the stuff, and that's online. So actually, people say, oh, a downturn is going to be terrible for the internet. Downturn is actually better for the internet, because when you're cutting budget, you start with magazines, then you do outdoor.
Yeah.
You know, the things that are the least trackable are the ones that are cut first. That's why I got out of the magazine business. I was like, this is a disaster.
Makes sense.
Well, all their metrics are based on lies, you know, like pass along in a magazine, like, oh, five people. I mean, what they try to convince you is like a million people got PC Magazine. Each PC Magazine was seen by five people. And that means 5 million people saw the ad on a page 128.
Right.
You know, it's like, that's a lot of leaps.
Yeah.
Whereas you're like, oh, here's your, you know, HP, you know, ad on Engadget or CNET. You can tell exactly how many people saw it, how many people clicked on it. Now you can tell if people were hovering over it.
Right.
I mean, it's to the point at which I think some people are getting too much data, and it's almost like they don't want the data anymore. They're like, we get the idea. You can tell us a lot. You know, just give us more ads. Give them for this price. And because everything's sold in an auction format, it's very efficient. You know, it's not like you know that the price per click is going to be 19 cents or 60 cents or whatever. It's the market corrects. So people are not going to overspend. If they gets up to $3 a click for a Kindle, maybe people are not going to pay it.
Right. We've got to have you on more often, Jason. I understood that. That made a lot of sense. Yeah.
You didn't ask about the Google Knoll project. I thought that was going to be like a big...
Knoll's on the list. You want to talk about Knoll? Google's Knoll is an attack on Wikipedia.
What a joke this is. This is why we probably shouldn't have talked about it.
Why is it a joke? I think it's frustrating.
Wikipedia's got 2.5, yeah, something like 2.5
What's
million
Google
pages.
Doing? Why do they want to do this?
They got 75,000 people already, you know, that are committed to it. So what's the point? Where's this going to go?
Well, I think that's the question. It's like, why did they do this now? And there was an interesting thing I read on Danny Sullivan, who's really great, who did Search Engine Watch, and now he's doing Search Engine Land. And he does the Daily Searchcast, which is one of the best podcasts after Twit.
Yeah.
And he is, he said when he talked to him that they were saying, this is an experiment, it might not even launch. So what I think is they were testing the waters, and they've gotten such a brutal response back. You know, people thinking it's competitive,
right,
that I think they're not going to launch it, or they're going to go slow in terms of launching it. Because if you think about it, what does it mean to publish? It means to find a writer, pay the writer, and get them distribution, right? And if you look at what they're saying they're going to do here, they're going to find writers, they're going to pay them, and they're going to give them distribution. And the only piece that's different than them versus, you know, Time Inc. or Condé Nast or Ziff Davis is that they are not owning the rights to the words. Well, that's a very small difference. And I think all the clients that Google has for their amazing ad business are going to take this the wrong way. And they're going to feel like Google is overreaching, which has been a couple of good blog posts saying like, this is too much. And even if Google doesn't, you know, attack people with this, or they don't do it too hard, it feels like they cross some imaginary line in people's minds between being a platform and being a content producer.
Right.
And I don't think they're going to be able to...
They don't want
to
be in that position. That's the last thing they'd want
to do. No. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the last time they did this was when they did Google News and they allowed people who were subjects in the stories to then comment afterwards.
That lasted three seconds, yeah.
Holy cow. The news people were like, what?
Right.
You're talking to the subjects of the stories we're writing?
Right.
You're in competition with us? Maybe we should reconsider running Google AdSense on our sites.
Yeah.
And that's the balance. When I went to...
No, you know, I think maybe talking this as a Wikipedia competitor, I think is maybe misunderstanding it. It sounds more like they just want to give experts pages. In fact, they even say there could be competing pages from the same...
Yeah.
On the same subject.
But I mean, then... You know, the same way Engadget stole writers from CNET, right?
Right.
Or curated talent. Well, now they could say to the Engadget writers, like, why write for Engadget or Gizmodo? Why don't you come here and we'll pay you directly? And if your story's good, it gets to the top and, you know, cut out the middleman. And it's that, you know.
Is Google proposing to pay these guys?
Yeah. There's going to be AdSense on it. And they're going to give them the lion's share of the AdSense. So then it's like, well, whoa, hold on a second. If you're competing for talent with Engadget, right? Like if I was running Weblogs Inc. at the time, I would be like, whoa, hold on.
But
not
how
cool.
Is this different from Mahalo? In a way, it sounds kind of like your model.
Well, I mean, we're not writing full articles. That's what Wikipedia does. And we'll write like a little box on each search result, on each guide, but we're not writing full articles. So we would probably link to this stuff.
You're paying people?
Oh, yeah, we pay people. Yeah.
Huh.
I believe in paying.
It actually sounds more like it's going after you than it is Wikipedia.
It doesn't feel like it's going after me. And I'm not really worried about, you know, everybody in the valley is like, oh my God, Google's going to compete with us. I'm not really worried about competing with Google. I mean, I'm not scared of Google. I mean, they're competitors. And so if they compete with us, that means they validate our market.
Well,
it means I can
go
raise more money and I can go head to head with them. And you know, it means there's a market there. So it means it's flattery.
Right.
But I do think that, you know, when I went to Yahoo and I went to Google when I was running Weblogs Inc., Google would say to me, you know, you might not want to work with Yahoo because they're competing with you on these blogs, you know? And they would point it out. Like, I'm talking about the Google reps. You know, we're not in the content business. Yahoo is. So if you're partners with Yahoo, you're basically funding their content efforts to compete with you.
It's like, and me I'd be putting like, yeah. Audible, like me putting ads for Audible on my show.
Getting with yourself, right? And I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. And then yeah. I go to Yahoo and I'd say, like, are you guys in the content business? They're like, no.
Oh.
I'm like, well, what about like all these game sites you have? Don't they compete with Joystick? And I heard that you offered three of our Joystick bloggers jobs. And like, oh, yeah, yeah, no, those are, that's just aggregating stuff. And we're just doing like a small thing. It's not really a big thing. And I'm like, well, it's sort of a big thing if it's the same content and the same writers and you're going after my writers.
Right.
So I told Yahoo I wouldn't work with them because they were trying to poach our writers. Well, now Google, if this, depending on how this is executed, they might be going after New York Times writers, right? What if the science writer from the New York Times says, I can write science articles all day long, put them on Google, and I'll make $100 to $300 per article, and you know, I'll have this library of articles that I'll own, I'll be able to write books based on it. You know, this is when people get nervous about Google. It'd be the
I'll tell you right now, the New York Times science writer is making more than that already, and he probably has the rights to most of those articles to reproduce in books. So they're going to have to go up
not
up
online.
The end.
So, you know, but I mean, pick a writer. So maybe the New York Times is the highest end, you know, and Engadget certainly didn't, you know, pull New York Times writers onto Engadget. So maybe it's, you know, Engadget they're going after and CNET, because Engadget certainly interfered with CNET's business or Ziff Davis's business. So maybe all three of those people could see writers leave, you know, to go work on this. But I think, honestly, Google's a good company. I think it's good people there, and I think they're smart, and I think they're not going to use this in any kind of heavy-handed way.
I want to wrap
I've
this
worked with them too long. You go know, ahead. They're good people, and they don't do things to destroy other companies.
Well, it's interesting and, also how protective
yet.
People are of Jimmy Wales. I mean, I think that's part of the other side of the reaction to this is, don't, Wikipedia is sacrosanct. Don't go against Wikipedia. They're
Jimmy Jesus Wales.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I got in a couple of fights with him, and I was like, "This is like fighting Christ. You can't win.
You can't win.
You know, everybody loves Christ.
Yep.
You know, all of a sudden I'm like, who fought Christ? I don't know.
You're the bad guy.
All of a sudden I'm the bad guy.
Hey, he's Jimbo. Well, you can't mess with Jimbo.
He's got the roll in his pocket.
He's got a roll, man.
Got the roll, and Jimbo's got the Bible.
So
did you hear about the COO of Wikipedia?
No, what happened?
Was a fella who shot her ex-boyfriend in the chest and was writing bad checks?
Yeah, that was a big story.
We missed that one.
It's on the blog, Dvorak.org/blog. Look up Wikipedia, you'll find it.
Go to
Dvorak.org/blog. We haven't covered the Reiser trial either, which is another. I mean, if we really wanted to be the gossip column, I don't know why Valleywag doesn't cover the Reiser trial more. That's a gossipy story.
Yeah, but this Wikipedia thing is off the charts. I mean, the person was the COO and was running the books of Wikipedia and had previously been arrested like a half dozen times or something, once for shooting her boyfriend in the chest with a shotgun or something, and then also for passing checks. And they hired her as a COO and didn't do a background check. And the woman who's running it, who lives in France, was like, oh, well, we don't do background checks in France. You know, it's like, well, dude,
what
wrong
is this
answer,
Google?
Man.
We have Le Web.
Whatever. It's just like, really, truly incompetent. I mean, to hire a COO with like, and supposedly the stories were in the Washington Post. So if you Googled the person's name,
wow,
you would have found out about it.
Dane,
yeah,
Dane, you didn't shoot anybody, did you?
What does it take to Google a name if you're going to hire somebody?
Yeah, okay.
I mean, come on. I mean, for a COO position, I mean, this is like one of the second or third top position in the company, in the nonprofit. It's nuts.
We also want to wish a happy birthday, 90th birthday today to Arthur C. Clarke, the last of the great triumvirate of sci-fi writers. In fact, I should have made it Arthur C. Clarke our Audible pick. There's some really good Arthur C. Clarke stuff on audible.com.
Yeah, he lives in Sri Lanka.
Sri Lanka.
Audible. I love Audible.
90 years old. I love Jason. Thank you for making up for a last ad on Audible. I appreciate it. Jason Calacanis is at Mahalo, M-A-H-O-L-O. Did I say that right?
M-A-H-A-L-O.
I always spell
Mahalo.
It wrong.
Mahalo. M-A-H-A-L-O. Mahalo.
Every time I put a link to Victoria, I spell it wrong. I don't know why that is.
Veronica, you mean?
Yeah,
your dyslexia is showing today. It's a good thing that you listen to Audible books and don't read books.
Thank
because
God. Now you know why.
Books can't mispronounce the words or anything. You just go right into Audible. You browse
right.
through. They got
it's
their
right.
best of 2007.
Yeah.
And wow, you look at the best of 2007 right on their site.
It's a good year.
I can download five of these right now.
That's
I might download
year.
About five
Some
of these.
Good stuff on there.
Because you go running, you're on a plane, you could just have this stuff ready to go in your car.
Don't sell them too much. I think they're undermining our audience.
On the subway,
they're going to take their business over to him.
Maybe that's the plan.
There is no him, but I'm saying, like, if you're on the subway, you could be reading the New York Post or listening to some Radiohead or whatever, or you could be bettering yourself and becoming a more worldly person. Get on some of the classics, maybe catch up on some of those science fiction books that you were supposed to read and didn't. It's a great, very efficient way to broaden your horizons and maybe become a little more intelligent and enlightened. Audible. We love you. Audible.
Audible.com/twit. They got two spots in today's show. Thank you very much, Jason.
Audible.
John C. Dvorak. John, we have to, you know, we have to cut these out for AOL because when the podcast runs on AOL's podcast channel, it's a non-commercial channel. So how I'm going to edit out this, I have no idea.
No, that was a person. That wasn't an ad. That was my personal feelings on Audible. We're talking about a technology
that's
company.
Editorial. Audible. There's editorial.
That's editorial.
All right, baby.
I get nothing from that ad. I'm just giving feedback on. I love Audible. So honest, heartfelt.
You know what I love? Dvorak.org/blog.
Love that too.
Everybody does.
They've got Kindles there for $5. Amazing. Amazing.
I'm into
and they have
a Kindle.
Wii's.
I'm
selling Wii's at half price.
Wii's at half price.
Wii's at half price. Limit 3 per person.
That'd be a good promotion.
Half price Wii's, Dvorak.org/blog.
He's actually got a video on the front page of, and you thought the Wiimote was only good for games on a Wii. I don't know what that is. Oh, is you can use it like a touch screen. Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. All right. Thanks, everybody. We will see it. Our next twit will be next Sunday. It'll be our last twit of the year. We'll do a kind of year-end roundup. Don't forget, we've still got that 20% off coupon for Scott Evest goodies. If you go to scottevest.com, when you check out at the end there, use my name Leo as the coupon code. You'll get 20% off anything that does not include the twit merchandise on ThinkGeek. That's a separate system. But if you are on scottevest.com, use Leo as the coupon code to get 20% off. We thank Scott Evest for that. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another twit.
This is amazing.
Is in the can. I should have paid attention. I don't know what I'm going to do. Too much work. The problem is, there's no limit. My server's completely collapsed. So here's the deal. I'm just trying to get the thing up, but I have a hell of a time. What blue screens? Like, forget it. I'm killing you.
Round the horn. Let's go round the horn.